Good morning, Kansas City. Welcome to the Border Patrol for this Monday, June 17th. We are more than halfway through the month of June. Can you believe that? I am Nate Bucati. Stephen St. John is on vacation for the next, 9 days.
Is that all?
Is this a staycation or a vacation?
I'm not sure. He said, I'm going away. Don't contact me.
Right. I saw on social media that he is coaching
some hoops.
Northland Elite basketball this weekend. So I don't know if he's leaving town after that. I have left him alone. And
that'd be well advised.
Yep. We will leave him alone for the week. So you got me and Jake Pounders to deal with.
He said, contact me only if it's an absolute emergency. Otherwise, figure it out. I said, yes, sir.
We'll figure it out.
Okay.
How are you, Pounders?
I'm good, man.
How was your weekend?
It was quick.
Yeah.
Beautiful weather, man. We went into the weekend, a lot of 50-50, might rain, might not. And, you're making your plans accordingly, trying to get as much stuff outside in as you can, especially with all the rain we've had over the last six weeks or so. But beautiful weekend. Weather worked out perfect.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. It was a really, it was a fun weekend for me in Kansas City. On Saturday, I was able to participate in, I will say, one of the coolest, if not the coolest, charity events I've ever participated in. The Wiffle at the Hollow on Saturday.
Some of those videos and pictures that were coming out of that. I was not there, obviously, but I was watching from afar from my, the comfort of my home. And some of those videos were awesome.
It
looked like a nice little intimate setting.
Joe Ungashick, who basically built this wiffle ball field in his front yard. Obviously, he's a person of means. He's got a really big, nice house in a beautiful neighborhood right across from the duck pond at Loose Park. I don't know how many times I've driven down Warnell Road right past it and just oblivious to the idea that there was even this big, because the foul poles are there. They stay there. But they built this whole stadium basically around it in his yard with bleachers. And they put bunting up on the windows of the houses, and they had old-style vendors walking around handing out lemonades and, Cracker Jacks and things to the kids. They had barbecue there. Chateau Milk was handing out ice cream sandwiches to all the kids. There was beer. There was, there was free beer. It was just an incredibly cool thing. And for anybody who grew up playing wiffle ball, which pretty much everybody did at some level, in some way, shape, or form in this country, if you were ever a kid, you played some wiffle ball. It just immediately takes you back to being a kid. And when you were a kid, if somebody would have told you you could play wiffle ball on a field like that, you would have been absolutely in heaven.
Sign me up.
And so it just, and the whole idea behind it is to make grown-ups feel like kids again. And I mean, as soon as you walked on that field, that's how you felt. And what was cool about it, too, is it was such an intimate setting that we got to let our kids run around and basically just be a part of the event. And, my son got to sit there and watch most of the wiffle ball game with George Brett.
I saw that. I was like, a little jerk.
Yeah. and I was trying to explain to somebody what this meant to somebody like me and you, Jake, that grew up, in the generation we grew up in. Dina Wathen, Duke Wathen, John Wathen's daughter, who I worked with for a long time when I was doing Royals coverage I taught her how to run the Fox Box, the little score graphic that you see on the corner of
your
screen. When you watch a Royals game or any other game and you see what the score is and what the count is. I taught her how to run that. So I've known Dina for a long time. She was sitting behind my son and George as they were, George is sitting in a lawn chair.
Oh, so she got that photo.
She took that picture.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she was nice enough and thoughtful enough to know this has got to be so cool for somebody like Nate to see this. So she took a picture of the two of them just sitting there watching the wiffle ball game. And just been hanging out with his buddy George, And you're trying to explain to a 9-year-old kid you're hanging out with George Brett. And so, I mean, the only way I could put it into terms to him was this guy was as big as Patrick Mahomes or bigger, really, at the time. Now, Patrick Mahomes might become bigger than George Brett because he might win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, in about 15 years if he continues doing what he did this year.
Right, but yeah, he's had a year where he played at the level that George Brett played at for over a decade, you know, and hasn't won a World Series, you know, yet. Hasn't gotten his team to the World Series of football yet. So, am I there? Steven or Jake's putting the picture of my son and George up there. And you can just see how cool the field is in the background. You know, I mean, it looks like a Norman Rockwell painting or something, you know, just this little kid sitting on the grass, you know, a grown up George Brett sitting in this lawn chair, and they're looking out on this wiffle ball field.
I'm going to be honest. I saw you put that picture up pretty quickly within an hour or so. And I was like, that little bastard.
Yeah. Yeah. And he got to basically,
I mean that.
Yeah.
You know I love
yes.
Ben. And I mean that because of
no.
just the pure jealousy that I have. You know, like, why can't I be there?
Well, I was thinking, why couldn't the 9-year-old me get to do this?
How you know, about the 39-year-old me?
Yeah, right, right. He doesn't understand this. He's just hanging out with, you know, he just knows his dad told him this guy's great. You know, he never watched George play. And George couldn't have been nicer to him. As soon as I told George that Ben does not use batting gloves in Little League because I refused to allow him to use batting gloves because George Brett never wore batting gloves.
He gave him a pine tar rag and said, way to go, kid.
His eyes lit up and he said, that's right. You don't need batting gloves, kid.
Pick up a little dirt, spit on the hands, put dirt on it.
They just did a tremendous job, and it was for a great cause. We had one of the recipients of the Battle Within on our team. Alex is a intensive care NICU nurse, so she deals with infants who have just been born who are dealing with serious life threatening situations and things like that. And you can imagine that that type of job can leave a mark on you. This wasn't just we had several veterans there who suffer from PTSD that were helped, but then we also had first responders, people like Alex who are helping us here in the United States on a day in day out basis as well, who suffer from PTSD and are helped because of this program. So to see them there, they did a great job of tying them into the event. It was just incredible, and it was really fun. I've got a very funny story to tell you at some point this morning about the day and everything that happened. But tip of the cap to Mitch Holtis, George Brett, and Matt Beisler, who were the captains of the team, and Mitch Wheeler and Joe Ungashick, and I'm going to leave people out, but. They all just did a phenomenal job. It was a really, really cool event for a great cause. So that was a great way to spend my Saturday. My kids getting to run around with Matt Beisler's kids and you know, do all that stuff and be a part of it. It was really fun. And to know you're doing it for a great cause was even better. And then yesterday, got up pretty much first thing in the morning and went down to No Other Pub and had some brunch with the kids and Kelly, my wife, and then we went to the U.S. Women's National Team watch party, which was another great crowd, even bigger than it was on game one. And pretty much the living room area was pretty darn full. There's still going to be room for more as the tournament goes on. The last group stage game is coming up on Thursday. We'll have another watch party. That's a big game because USA and Sweden are both 2-0. They're both going to advance, but one team is going to win the group and one team is going to finish second in the group. And that will determine which side of the bracket you go to, who you play in the next round, all that. It's going to be the first real test for this U.S. women's national team that's so deep that they actually changed 7 players from their lineup that won 13-0 in the first game. And they still went out and they won 3-0. And if it wasn't for an unbelievable job, Jake, were you just not blown away by the goalkeeper for Chile?
She was on. She was amazing.
She was the star of the game.
She was amazing.
She was the star of the game, right?
She was amazing. Absolutely phenomenal.
It should have been. It could have been. Literally, could have been 8-0. I mean, it was 3-0. It could have been 5-8 if she didn't make.
I can
all
think
the
of
five.
Saves. I can think of five. Five that are like
real
hands
saves.
On your head, like.
Not just like, oh, she was in the right place at the right time saves, but like five, wow, she just denied a goal save.
Right. Yep, absolutely. Not routine and not even a tough, like out of this world, yeah, like you said, goal saving saves. Like the shots that should be goals. Like if you're a goalkeeper, one or two of those a game, whew, like that's a hell of a game.
Yeah.
But to have five I can think of just off the top of my head, she was world class.
Yeah.
Absolutely world class. And for United States to even still get three past her.
Yeah.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Well, Carly Lloyd at 37 years old is still world class. To me, she still looks like the best player on the U.S. women's national
team. She had her tenth career World Cup goal, puts her third all time.
Ninth and tenth. She had a brace. Six games in a row in the World Cup that she scored a goal in. That's a women's World Cup record. And she's 37, and they're basically bringing her off the bench, they think, for all the big games because of her age. She played 90 minutes, and she was the best player on the field. And I thought she looked better than any of the women's national team players looked in game one. She is amazing. So that was fun. I got to do that with my kids. I got to bring my son and daughter up on stage with me, and we led the I Believe chant at the watch party, which was a thrill for me on Father's Day. I just thought, you know what? They're into this. They're dressed up. They want to lead the I Believe chant. Who doesn't want to follow some kids when it comes to, leading a chant like that? So I let them come up on stage with me and do that. It was fun. We had a great time together watching the game. Then I went home, and I settled in for the coolest sports moment of the weekend for me. And you know that I'm not even a big golf fan. But watching Gary Woodland go out and win the U.S. Open on Father's Day, considering what he and his wife have been through in their efforts for him to become a father, was just incredible. It was so cool to watch. And I did come away as a person who doesn't generally love to watch golf with a greater appreciation for those who do and why. People like you, Jake, like to watch golf so much. That really was good drama. And because I was emotionally invested in the guy, because, look, Gary Woodland is the first Kansas Jayhawk to ever win a major golf tournament. The first one ever. And I've actually had the opportunity to spend a couple evenings hanging out with Gary Woodland. It was several years ago now. Back when I hosted the television coverage of Late Night in the Fog, Gary Woodland came, and he's buddies with Gurley, and so Gurley and he and I got to hang out pretty much most of the night. And to be perfectly honest with you, I did not appreciate it at all.
Oh, the guy's on PGA Tour. Yeah. You know, he's had some wins.
Yeah.
He's had some wins on tour. The guy's pretty... he's a famous, popular,
everybody's like, oh, wow, Gary Woodland's going to be here. I was like, yeah, sweet, you know.
Hey, where's Tiger at?
And to be honest with you, at that time, I don't think, at least my perception was that, okay, he's on the tour, but, like, he's not going to go, like, win a major or something, right? Like, I don't think he had ever really threatened to win a major. I don't think, you know, at that point, because I know the last few years he's starting all of a sudden
his top 10 was, I think, last year.
Yeah.
I think he finished, his best finish was sixth at the PGA Championship, I think, in 18.
Yeah. And
but he's had some wins on tour, but, you know, just I would say in the last 2 to 3 years, you know, as he's 35 years old, you know, I would say he started becoming in discussion in the guise of, well, he's good enough too, but will he ever? You know, win a major. You know, Sergio Garcia was always at the top of that list until 2017 Masters. You know, and now Ricky Fowler's kind of the guy at the top of the list. And, you know, but he's always probably been considered in the top 5 or 10 guys that haven't won a major yet that are good enough to. And and he's always been in that discussion because of, you know, he has a unique quality in terms of, we see how far guys hit the ball nowadays. And he's at the top of that list.
He hits even farther.
Yes, he's one of the longest drivers on tour. And so with that skill, with that ability, it's like, you know, he can do this, you know, at a world-class level. Now, can he ever put it all together to win a major? And that's what we saw this weekend.
And he did.
Absolutely.
So I got to spend some time with him. I didn't, and I maybe he probably was refreshed by the fact that I didn't really know much about what he was, what, you know, about him, or you know, it didn't seem like this big deal to me. And he was just a guy. That's what the thing. And I, if you talk to Gary Woodland, he probably would never remember, you know, that he hung out with me, you know, like who's that little guy again? So I'm not going to sit here and claim we became like best friends or anything. We spent an evening with
Girlie. You know, that little guy. I made fun of him.
I kept making fun of the whole time.
That was hilarious. Yes. I remember him.
You might remember that.
What was his name again?
The little guy you made fun of the whole time. Yeah. But my memory was just that it seemed like just hanging out with the dude, you know, and he didn't give off a, hey, I'm Gary Woodland. I'm on the PGA Tour. Check me out vibe whatsoever. And people that spend a lot more time around him than me were quick to take to Twitter last night to talk about what a good guy Gary Woodland is. And that always makes you feel good, right? Like when you see somebody that you're rooting for, sometimes you're kind of afraid to learn much about them because, you know, oftentimes they say you don't want to get to know your heroes because, you know, they might let you down or whatever. And all anybody had to say yesterday was how happy they, like other golfers, peers, people that cover him. Scott Van Pelt, who I'm a big fan of, and I think does a great job on ESPN, and obviously comes from a golf background, is a really knowledgeable golf guy. He tweeted out, Gary Woodland is one of the best guys in a tour full of them. Huge sports fan, regular dude. This will be very well received. Had to hold off the baddest man in the sport at the moment, and did. At Pebble. What a way to become a major champion. And that, I thought, was the coolest of all the compliments I saw from him, because it also talked about what a great guy he is, but what the accomplishment really was. And when he talks about the baddest dude in the sport at the moment, Brooks Koepka, who, by the way, I think Woodland and Koepka, too, are reflective of the current sport of golf, which is you have athletes playing the game. And I mean guys that, they are built like athletes. They look like athletes. As you know, Gary Woodland was a Division II college basketball player before he transferred from Washburn to go to Kansas. Brooks Koepka is built like a machine. You know, I mean, you see these guys now, and I think it all started with Tiger, really, was the first one to make it seem like, no, you actually should work out and be strong, and the ability to hit the ball as far as you can matters. And Brooks Koepka became the first guy ever to shoot below 70 on all 4 days of the U.S. Open and not win. And that means that Gary Woodland had to go take down the champ who was there to defend his crown. Like, this wasn't one where the defending champ finished 15th or wasn't really even in the running. This is a guy that was going for his third straight U.S. Open, and that hadn't been done since around the turn of the 20th century, like 1902 to 1905, I think it was, the last time somebody won three straight U.S. Opens. And Brooks Koepka was out there to defend that. I mean, he, you know, like I said, he went sub 70 all four rounds, and Gary Woodland beat him. And beat him by a couple strokes.
And Koepka was just so awful. I mean, he was on fire yesterday too.
And so he was keeping the pressure on Woodland the whole time, and the chip that Woodland had from on the green, and I admit, being a guy that doesn't watch much golf, I was at my in-laws last night watching it. They're very into golf, and I turned to my brother-in-law and I said, "Are you allowed to? You're allowed to chip off on the green?" And he said, "Oh yeah." And I said, "What happens if you take like a big divot out of the green? You know, or is that all right?"
You replace it.
And he said, "Well, the thing is, chipping on a green, it's so dense that if you get into the ground, your club's just going to stop. Yep. It's going to stick in the ground. You're not even going to be able to follow through. So he has to be perfect with this shot. I mean, he's going to have to just skim it right off the top of the grass, and you know, keep his club face open the whole way so that he creates a whole bunch of backspin and get it over that ridge." And I was thinking, like, if you asked me to throw a golf ball over that ridge and put the right amount of backspin over it and have it land just over the ridge, but then have backspin so that while it's going down the hill, it'll slow down in front of the hole. And I mean, he put that thing like a foot from the hole. It was incredible.
Yeah, these guys are pretty good.
I was amazed watching that. And they even the announcers were talking about, like, this is a tough shot. Like, even for the pros, this is a tough shot. Even for a guy that's going to win a major championship, this is a tough shot. And he drilled it. It was so cool to watch. And you could see when he was walking up to make his final putt on the 18th, he was already getting choked up because he knew at that point, I think all he needed to do was three putt to win. And so he was going to win. And he was coming to grips with it. He started getting choked up before he even hit his final putt. And then, of course, he sinks that final putt and turns around and just sticks his arms out to the crowd. And some of the shots that they had on Fox, they did a sequence where they just replayed the entire putt all the way through the crowd reaction and his reaction. And they never, you know, they showed the entire shot from each camera angle. And then they showed his parents and their reaction. And that shot from out from above the water, looking towards the gallery, and he just turns and puts his arms out, and the gallery goes crazy. What a rush that must have been for him. It was really, really cool stuff. So that was just a great way to cap Father's Day weekend. Really fun to watch. And we're going to talk about it this morning on the show. We're going to have Rex Hoggard. Am I saying his name right? Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel is going to join us today to talk about that. We're also going to talk with our pal Shea Groom. Vroom, vroom, groom, who is a professional women's soccer player in the NWSL here. She's from Liberty, Missouri. We had her on to preview the Women's World Cup before it started, and now that they've got a couple of games in, we're going to talk about how the women have performed so far and what they have in store for them on Thursday against Sweden. We're going to talk about the Wiffle at the Hollow, and we'll talk some Royals baseball as well, as the Royals did salvage one game out of three in Minnesota. They avoid the sweep by getting a win on Father's Day yesterday. Now they go to Seattle. We will take a break. We will be back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. It was incredibly cool to hear them saying, Topeka native Gary Woodland, the U.S. Open champion. The champion, Gary Woodland from Topeka. And then, of course, ESPN keeps showing the highlights of when Gary Woodland took on Kirk Heinrich, Nick Collison, Keith Langford, and the Kansas Jayhawks at Allen Fieldhouse in one of those preseason games that KU and you know, local schools a lot of times will play against some of the in-state schools. They show Gary Woodland burying a three-pointer against the Jayhawks, taking a charge against Nick Collison, and then they show him winning the U.S. Open at 35 years old. Let's hear Fox's coverage as Gary Woodland was presented with the trophy on the 18th green after winning his first ever major, becoming the first ever University of Kansas alum to win a golf major.
What a performance by Gary this entire week, but especially today. Let's talk about everything that was happening. You had the lead during this round. How much were you aware of your lead, and how much did that play into your strategy?
The strategy stayed the same. I played exactly the same off the tee box as I had all week, outside of, you know, I had a little cushion on the last, so we played a little more conservatively. Rosie obviously birdied the first hole to eliminate that lead pretty quickly, but it was a huge birdie there on the second to kind of stay there, get that lead back, gave me a lot of confidence, made two good swings. That's one of the tougher tee shots out here, so it was nice to get that going and then, you know, make a couple birdie three as well. Really got me going early in the round.
Mentally and emotionally, how would you describe where you were today?
As good as I've ever been. You know, I knew my record coming in. I knew the 54-hole lead. I've heard a lot about it. People talk a lot about it. I just kept telling myself records are meant to be broken. Stay in it. Never let myself believe that it was over with. Even walking up the last, even before I hit that last putt, just kept telling myself it's not over. You got to finish. And it was nice that putt went in. I'm glad it's over with.
I know you've dreamed of this moment to be a major champion. Holding that trophy, how impactful is it?
I mean, I'm more nervous right now than I was playing today. I really can't put it into words. A lot of hard work. I've surrounded myself with a lot of great people, a lot of great coaches over my whole life, and it adds up to people helping me get to this moment, and I'm excited to share it with them.
finally, your dad was greenside as you won. You're a father to Jackson. Your wife, Gabby, is at home with two little girls, identical girls, waiting to be born in August. What does this mean as a father to win on Father's Day?
It's special. Obviously, having my dad, I wouldn't be where I am without my father. And, you know, being able to FaceTime with my son this morning, I wish they were here. But, you know, my wife, obviously, we got some kids on the way. So it's special. I can't wait to get home and hug him. And just be with him and enjoy the moment.
Congratulations on the day and the week. You're a major champion, Gary.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
You know what? That is a literally accurate statement. None of us would be where we are without our fathers. That's scientifically true. But that's really cool. It was awesome to see that on Father's Day. Congratulations to Gary Woodland. We'll be talking about him a lot through the course of the show today. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Well, the NBA offseason is already off to a rip-roaring start. They haven't even they're in the process of getting ready for the parade in Toronto today to crown the champions or to celebrate the champions. And the NBA offseason has become the best offseason in professional sports in North America, right?
Exciting, I suppose.
The NFL's is terrific, and we probably pay the closest attention to that because we're obsessed with the NFL. And the NFL offseason's not bad.
But the drama?
But the NBA offseason is just the best offseason.
The most dramatic, I think, is the best way to put it.
And we get the report over the weekend that your L.A. Lakers Pounders have traded for Anthony Davis.
And I've boycotted the Lakers since they acquired LeBron James.
They're not your Lakers anymore. Your hatred for LeBron overpowers your love of the Lakers.
Currently, yes. I'll jump right back on as soon as LeBron's gone, but I can't actively root for him.
I just saw on ESPN that after this move, the Lakers are the early favorites to win the NBA title next year. No. I mean, I kind of want to see where everybody else ends up, you know. Is Kawhi going to end up in L.A. with the Clippers?
Where's Klay going? KD going?
Of course, KD's not really going to be a factor this next year. Klay, I would think, will be a factor by the second half of the season next year. But, yeah, we don't know where these guys are going.
Right.
So, we don't know what's going to happen with the Houston Rockets. You know, it's...
They kind of seem like they're just sitting back and they're like, well, everybody else is losing players to injury and overpaying a max out player here, and we're just sitting back and doing nothing, and they really they're not taking a hit. You know what I mean? They're not digressing. You know, Golden State has clearly gotten worse just because of the injuries.
Right.
You know, in the free agency. But the West will be wildly entertaining.
Yeah, and I thought the East was wildly entertaining this year.
It was more entertaining than the West, honestly, you know?
It's getting good, I think, in the NBA now, because now you feel like there actually are a handful of teams that can win.
And also, it kind of, this season, what it gave us in terms of fans and maybe players in the NBA, look at what Kawhi Leonard did. He didn't need a super team.
Right.
He did not need a super team. They had a bunch of good players around him. They had a top five, top three. You know, I think he's one of the top two best players in the league right now.
Yep.
If Kevin Durant's healthy, then I think Kevin Durant's the best player in the league. But Kawhi Leonard is in that discussion as one of the best players in the league.
Yep.
You put some serviceable to good players around him, and they just won a championship.
Yeah.
And so the age of, hey, you have to have three max out legit all-stars to win a championship is out the window. You know, and it kind of, it's back to the LeBron when LeBron ended up beating Golden State. You know, it was him and he had Kyrie, and Kyrie was a stud.
Yeah.
But, you know, these super teams, you might not need one. You might just need one of the best players in the league and then filling around them.
You know, and the thing, though, that to me is so amazing about the Warriors is they weren't a super team until they became one. You know, they were not assembled the way that the Celtics, when Paul Pierce and, you know, Garnett and Allen all got together, or like LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Bosch, or, you know,
They groomed a super team.
Yeah, they drafted those guys.
Right, they groomed it.
They drafted those guys and developed them. Nobody knew that Klay Thompson was going to be a star. Nobody even really knew that Steph Curry was going to become a star. He was the 15th pick.
Yep.
And the Raptors, they were just a good team. They were a team.
Who couldn't get past LeBron. You know, it's like LeBron was their kryptonite. This is one of the three or four best teams in the East.
Don't you kind of wonder if they could have gotten past LeBron if they had Kawhi Leonard, though, instead of DeMar DeRozan?
Yep.
I mean, I think, you know, but that would have been interesting to see.
It would have been, but the reality is that it took Kawhi forcing his way out of San Antonio and him being on a one-year contract and in Toronto having to take a little bit of a risk, more than a little bit, a pretty big risk, to get 1 year of a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what a roll of the dice that was. I mean, look at the fruit that provided Toronto. Championship, that risk.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't blow it up, but hey, this is guy, you know, DeRozan was a mainstay. He was one of the team leaders. He was one of the two best players on the team, and they shipped him out and they brought in Kawhi and, you know, with the help of Lowry and, you know, the role players on that team. We say role players, but those are really good players. Those are, you know.
Yeah, and Pascal Siakam might be a star in the making.
Right.
I mean, he is really good. So, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, what the next domino is to fall. Now that Anthony Davis is teaming up with LeBron James, they didn't make the playoffs this year, and immediately Vegas thinks, they're like 3-1 to win the NBA Finals, what I just saw on ESPN.
The LeBron factor, right? You know, you get a healthy LeBron, stick around all year, and the guy's proven that he can get to the championship with almost nothing around him.
We'll see if they have a healthy LeBron. That's the thing you got to remember is he's 34. Right.
And until this point, he had been just Mr. Durable. And that was kind of was the first nick in the armor last year.
They were talking on SportsCenter last night about how Kawhi Leonard this year sat out the second game of back-to-back games. Every time they had a 2 days back-to-back games, he didn't play. And they were going to manage his minutes. We're going to manage his workload through the course of the year, and he'll be ready to go by the finals. And the finals are like a full season in themselves if you make it this far. And of course, LeBron made it to those finals 8 years in a row, whatever it was. So his body's taken even though he's the biggest, strongest guy in the league, his body's taken a beating over all that time, and he's 34 years old. He's going to turn 35 in the middle of next season. And I don't know how often you can count on a guy staying healthy all year long at that age. So it will be interesting to see, but that was a big splash right off the bat, the Lakers getting Anthony Davis.
And how do you not take notes if you're the Lakers? Like, that has to be probably the biggest concern. All right, how do we keep this guy fresh? How do we make sure injuries aren't ever completely unavoidable, but you can limit the risk of an injury.
Manage his workload, manage his minutes, but still put yourself in a position to get a decent seed in the playoffs.
Right.
You know?
And is that team so LeBron-centric that you can't rest them, or else you just, I mean, right now would they have five guys under contract?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have any guards.
$23 million in cap space now that it got reduced down to Davis.
They don't have any guards on their current roster.
Yeah, so they might need to figure that out.
Yeah, maybe.
All right, we'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. One of my favorite moments of the weekend of sports happened at the Women's World Cup, and it did not involve the United States, at least not directly. I'm going to retweet a thread about the Thailand women's national team. If you remember, they got smoked by the U.S. 13-0 in the first game that they played at the World Cup. And there was all the controversy about whether or not the U.S. women celebrated too much when they scored these goals. Were they rubbing it in? Were they unsportsmanlike to the Thailand players?
Rude.
Carly Lloyd did a golf clap after she scored her first goal yesterday. That was clearly them, you know, making a point to all the critics out there. Thailand got smoked again, this time by Sweden. Not as bad. I think 5-1 was the final score. But In the very end of the game in stoppage time, Thailand scored a goal. Their first ever Women's World Cup goal. Now, the women's game right now is still trying, they're trying to grow it on a global level, and they have 24 teams in this World Cup. On the men's side, there's 32, and they're about to expand it to more. But it's always been 32 for as long as I can remember in the men's World Cup. But they don't have enough countries that take women's soccer seriously yet to field the 32-team field. I mean, look, think about it this way. I mean, if we're seeding it 1 through 24, the difference between 1 and 24 in women's soccer is 13 goals, right? That's how far some of these lower nations have to go. When they scored their goal, the players were going ballistic, and the coach on the sideline was approached by another woman who had been sitting in the technical area, and she was openly weeping, like just crying tears, because they scored a goal in the World Cup. And so I saw a thread from Andrew Das of the New York Times who explained who that woman was that got up and hugged the head coach and was crying. Her name, and I'm gonna butcher the pronunciation of her, but her name is Nuwalfan Lamsam. She is the general manager of the Thailand's women's soccer team, but that's not her full-time job. She is the chief executive of one of the biggest insurance companies in Thailand. And she basically hires all of the players on that team to work for the insurance company so that they have jobs and enough money to try to go play soccer. She's basically bankrolled this team to try to get the women's game going in Thailand. So she isn't just trying to advocate for the women's game. She's putting her money and her career and everything where her mouth is. And I will retweet this so you can see, or if you see her reaction to me, it shows like the moments like the World Cup are so much more than just about who wins the ultimate trophy. Those moments along the way. And what could this do for little girls who are growing up in Thailand looking at this now saying maybe there's a chance for me to play someday? And what that means for them. Argentina got their first ever point on the women's side. South America, for the longest time, women were not allowed to play soccer. And the support that they get and the infrastructure that they have has not been anywhere near what we've had in the United States and in some of the Western European countries. They got their first ever point by getting a 0-0 draw, which usually would be like, okay, whatever. And they were dropping to their knees and crying because it was such a big moment. I like moments like that. It's pretty cool. You can see that on Twitter. Follow me, Nate_Bucati. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. All right, that's going to do it for our hour on 38 The Spot. Stay tuned to Sports Radio 810 WHB. As coming up on the show, we'll talk from Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel at 9:30 about Gary Woodland's amazing U.S. Open Cup Championship. We'll talk with Shea Groom at 9 o'clock about the Women's World Cup. We'll talk some Royals baseball with you and more right ahead on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So long, everybody on TV.